Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, Jimmy, for a very special guest.
Well, we do. It's Paul Anacone. Paul Anacone was an All-American at the University of Tennessee. He played on the pro circuit. He has coached some great players like Pete Sampras, Tim Henman, Roger Federer, Sloane Stephens, and right now working with Taylor Fritz. Paul, how you doing?
Good, guys. How you guys doing?
Well, we're doing fantastic. Tell us what's kept you busy with the Tennis Channel.
Yeah, it's been interesting times for us all, right? We're having to recreate things and kind of reinvent what we're doing. And in the meantime, for me, hopefully not drive my wife crazy. That's kind of my biggest goal. She's not used to having me around so much. But no, we've been showing a few different exhibitions and some of the tennis communities trying to figure out ways to get some tennis going again. There's been a few different exhibitions around the country and a couple also over in Europe. Last week we did the All-American Challenge that was down in Atlanta and covered that. And now just waiting with fingers crossed to kind of see what happens with the tours, conversations about trying to open up again in August and to see what kind of plans they have in place.
Well, in the exhibition, and I watched your call of the Sam Querrey Tommy Paul match in Atlanta, limited fans. I didn't really see any bald people, although I saw a couple of them off to the side that weren't acting as they usually do in terms of retrieving balls. And I just wonder, is this kind of the new normal for tennis?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do, and being an old-timer, I think it's hard for me to do it, but I'm trying to go into all this with an open mind, right? I mean, we look at the environment we're in, and you look at the options, and you look at the possibilities, and you kind of go, okay, do we listen to our science folks and see if we can figure out a different way to try to play for the time being, or do we not play? If there's a choice and you can play safely and our scientists and doctors can help us do that and we have protocols and procedures in place in case there is a positive test, then I'm for playing tennis and I'm for playing sports. I don't know about you guys, but I miss not being able to turn on the TV and seeing all different kinds of sports. So we've got to be smart. We've got to be prudent. But I think there are ways that a lot more smarter people than I can figure it out. But it may be the new norm for a while. Maybe a new norm for the while. I know a couple weeks ago the folks in Charleston put on a women's event that was terrific. You know, it's hard with no fans. You miss that feeling from the arena. You miss the atmosphere. But to see the ladies on the court in Charleston and see the guys on the court last week in Atlanta, I would vote for that over nothing for the time being. Yeah. And I don't believe in perfect. I think it's a moving target right now.
The U.S. Open schedule for New York is supposed to be starting in late August. Do you think that there will be some big names that might elect not to play? I know that folks like Novak Djokovic is not decided. I'm not sure where Nadal is, but do you think there could be some big names that don't show?
Oh yeah, I'll actually be very surprised if there isn't. I've got a lot of friends in Europe, and all they see is what they're seeing on the news. Right, they're seeing a lot of spiking numbers and a lot of scary times in some of our states. I think New York is actually doing pretty darn well. They got slammed right at the beginning, but they seem to be trending in a really good direction and trying to use all they can to figure out ways to get sports going. But I think most of our European friends just see our country as a whole, and they see all of these different areas that have these huge hot spots. So there's a lot of very kind of nervous folks from across the pond that wonder whether or not they should come over. So I'll be surprised if there are not some missing big names.
Paul, it's good to talk to you again, and sure hope that everybody remains safe and sound in your neck of the woods.
Well, that's the goal. That's what we're trying to do. Everyone's trying to get used to our new reality and do the best we can and see if we can stay safe and take care of each other and have some patience and perseverance.
With what we've seen in terms of some of the pushback, for instance, I think it was that we heard from Djokovic and Nadal that they weren't up for all that would be required for the U.S. Open, and as you and Jimmy were talking about. But also, what do you think in terms of the reaction for the goodwill tour, essentially, that Djokovic was trying to put together in Europe, where you had a handful of players that tested positive, and he has really been taken to task for trying to make that happen, because at times he was shown to be not social distancing and partying and doing different things like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's kind of a shame, because I think that you know, it was all for good intentions. You know, this was a very much of a mission of from Novak's heart. He wanted to be philanthropic, wanted to help his home country and a lot of the folks over there and raise some revenues for some very good causes. And you know, Serbia had their government had lifted all of the restrictions. I got to say, when I turned on the TV and saw it, I kind of commentated holding my breath, if that's possible. You know, to see the players on the court was great, but I was so nervous because there wasn't any social distancing at all, and there was nothing done in the stands, and the stands were packed. So I was very nervous, and look, it was really sad for me to see it all come together like that, because I know Novak was trying to do it for the right reason. But boy, we are really behind the eight ball from the start with this COVID-19, and we can't take anything for granted. I think the young athletes are in positions where it's very unlikely that they'll be seriously ill, but it's very dangerous, and even our experts don't really know yet. So I think that's why ever since then you're seeing a lot of people take a lot of precautions to see if there's a way to kind of go up the staircase, and that's how I look at it. I think that the Adria Tour there kind of went from the bottom stair all the way to the top stair, and we need to go kind of one step at a time and figure out protocols and procedures to make it as safe as possible, and nothing's going to be perfect, and then figure out if people do get COVID-19 and they're there playing, how are we going to manage that? What does that look like, and do we keep playing? Where do we cut it off, and how does it work? So it is a very multi-pronged approach, and I think the powers that be are trying to figure that out now and learn from the mistakes that all of us are making.
When you look at the top players in the world and what they are used to having on hand at their disposal, as well as resources, you can quickly exceed what has been suggested to be a minimal representation. As for instance, when we see the bubble in Orlando for the NBA, you know that it's greatly reduced the amount of support staff that's going to be there. But when you're a tennis player and you count on having a coach and perhaps a physical therapist and or trainer or a nutritionist or just your team that travels with you from one location to the next, how difficult do you think that is to adjust to if you're just used to having a certain amount of people on hand with you when you go to a tournament?
I think it's going to be tough for the top players, especially because they're, you know, they're generally the ones with the teams. Most of the other players have a coach. Some of them have a coach and physio. So I think it's going to be very difficult for the top players. We'll see where it ends up. The other thing, guys, that's going to be so bizarre, picture Novak Djokovic playing on center court against Sam Querrey with, I don't know, 30 people milling around watching at Arthur Ashe Stadium. That's going to be really bizarre. So I think that there's so many things to think about, and I don't think there is an answer. It's a matter of trying to figure out how malleable we all can be. But I think the lack of having a big team is mostly a top player issue. But look, it's a new horizon out there for everybody. So we're going to have to try to figure out how to make the best of a horrible situation.
Our guest, Paul Anacone. Paul, because tennis is such a global sport, do you think it has been impacted more than many other sports?
I think so. And so funny, because all my friends outside of tennis said, oh, you're going to be great, individual sport and two players, that's it. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great once you get them on the court, but explain to me how you get top 100 players from 47 different countries around the world to get through all these different borders and to be okay and to keep things quarantined and to keep the COVID under control. There's 47 different countries represented between the top 100 players on the men's and women's tour. That is a very complicated spider web to deal with.
Mm. Do you think that that the U.S. Open will watch closely the two tournaments that precede it, the City Open in Washington, and then the Western and Southern Open in New York? Do you think the U.S. Open will watch closely at how those sports are operate?
Yeah, they will, and they'll work hand in hand. I mean, they are the owner of the Cincinnati event, and it's going to be played at Arthur Ashe Stadium. So they will be putting that together, and I know that they're working hand in hand with the ATP and WTA tours to come up with procedures and protocols that make the most sense. I think what's going to be interesting, because next week team tennis starts, and we're going to have team tennis in Greenbrier in West Virginia, and they're going to have a bubble very similar like the NBA is doing. They're going to play all the team tennis at the Greenbrier Resort, and I'll be very curious to see how that plays out. And I'm sure the USTA and the WTA and the ATP are going to be looking with bated breath to see how that all works. But look, my big thing is, if we think that sporting events are going to happen and there's not going to be any COVID cases with these athletes, then we probably shouldn't have them, because there are going to be COVID cases right now. Mm-hmm. Every time we see this, it really happens. Charleston did a great job. They had zero COVID cases. They had no fans. The players in the tournament did such a tremendous job. No one got sick. But I think the idea is to think about Washington, D.C., think about the U.S. Open, Cincinnati, and you're talking about a few hundred people, a few hundred players, just players alone showing up. That kind of a crowd showing up, coming in from all over the world, I can't imagine we're not going to have a few cases. So if that's the case, what's the protocol? What's an accepted number of cases to have? And if there is no accepted number, then everyone's got to take a deep breath and really think about whether or not we should play.
The challenge, of course, is getting back into the swing of things, literally and figuratively. What do you think have been the biggest challenges? No doubt we've seen Major League Baseball players at times struggle to have someone just to play catch with when it comes to tennis. What do you think the biggest challenges have been for those that have been on the shelf since the middle of March?
Well, as an athlete, and you mentioned Taylor Fritz. I've been trying to help him for a long time, and through these times, I think it's really challenging, because until recently, the players haven't had a starting line, so that they don't know really when they're starting up again. So initially it was, how long should I take off before I get going again? And I think depending on the stage of the player's career, the older players with more experience will use most of this time to get as rested and recovered and energized as possible. And for the younger players, I think it's an amazing opportunity to try to get better, to really work on things. So I think there are a couple different signs to try to deal with, but I just think it's each person's going to have different things to try to, different hurdles to jump over. But initially it was that, okay, when do we start up again, and how do I periodize my preparation so I'm ready to go?
While we have been waiting for, as you mentioned, the start line and when to perhaps circle the calendar to see when tennis would return, one thing unfortunately we found out is that 2020 was not going to see Roger Federer again, as he had another procedure done on a knee. And can you tell us how he's doing, and what is it like to see Roger Federer closing in on what will be the ultimate finish line for his career?
Yeah, it's probably been 10 days, 2 weeks since we've been in touch, and he seems in good spirits. He's spending a lot of time with his family, and I think the procedure went well, and based on everything that's gone on and all of the who knows what's going to happen, he kind of thought, let me take a deep breath and just take this time and try to really get ready to go, so that if things are good in 2021, I'm healthy, I'm fit, I've got a full fuel tank mentally and physically, and I can get going. Look, it's just so amazing to think, it closing in now on 39 years of age, he's still in the top five of the world. And it's just for me, I don't even know what to say about it. It's just, I have a big cliche that I always say, which is, don't bet against great, because they're just different. All these great athletes do things that it's hard for us to comprehend. And I think Roger's love for the game and his desire to be out on the tennis court is what fuels his fire. He loves to be a citizen of the world. He loves the game that he competes at. And he truly cherishes bringing his family around the world to see all the wonderful spots on this globe that we have.
So, Paul, while you're not betting against Federer, would you bet that he would win another major?
Well, it's hard. You know, for me, I would say it's very difficult to say there's no way he can. 12 months ago, he had 2 match points in the finals of Wimbledon. And I still think on grass courts, when he plays well, he is one of the toughest guys to beat in the world. And he showed us that 12 months ago. What I don't know, and what's really difficult, and this is probably a great question for a strength and conditioning and a sports scientist, is at what stage do you start to deteriorate in terms of the difference between taking a break and letting your body recover and taking so much time that your skills start to dwindle? I don't know that answer, but I just know the older you get, the harder it is to sustain a high level. You can still have great days, but it's tough to have great 2 weeks, great months, great entire years. So that's going to be the challenge. But that being said, you know, Roger, can he put together 2 weeks and be in the finals of a major again and give himself another chance? I'm not betting against him.
Yeah. I think we've been blessed to see 3 all-time greats, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic. When all is said and done, Paul, who is going to end up with the most majors out of that threesome?
Well, if everybody stays healthy as long as they should and the tour returns to normal, I would think that Novak's going to finish with the most. That would be my guess, just because he's got more years left in his prime. I think Rafa will probably win the French Open for another 10, 15 years, probably, based on what we've seen. But I just think Novak is still at the top of his game, the top of his talents. Who knows what's going to happen mentally, physically, and emotionally? Will he get tired? Will he have had enough? Will he want to just settle down with his family? So many things happen at this stage of the career. But when you look at the macro, and you know Novak is this close right now, and he's the youngest by a decent amount, I would say he has the highest likelihood of winning multiple majors down the road. So I give him a slight edge.
Do you think that he will go down as the greatest tennis player ever, Djokovic?
You know, I always have this conversation with folks, and I try to steer clear of it, not because I want to be on a fence, but just because I kind of feel in a strange way it's almost unfair to compare eras, because I feel like, you know, people, when Pete was winning everything and saying he was the greatest of all time, I was like, well, what about Rod Laver, won 2 Grand Slams? And when you watch it on TV, the game was very different. But if Rod Laver was in this era with his mindset, with his skill set, I'd be hard-pressed to imagine that he wouldn't be a great player. So what would he do in this era? So I always feel like it's the most accomplished instead of the greatest. I would say that, like I just said before, Novak probably will be the most accomplished in terms of major titles. That is my guess. As far as the greatest goes, I want to let all the pundits and everyone else just argue about it, and I'll just sit back with a nice beverage, and I'll watch all the great players and appreciate what they've done.
Paul, how excited are you to see the U.S. Open in New York, to get that going in late August?
I'm really interested to see. You know, I just want to try to go into it with a really open mind and expect it's going to be very different. Expect there's probably not going to be all of the top players. And I want to see what the USTA, and I want to see what all the folks that have their thinking caps on come up with. And I want to try to be flexible in terms of passing judgment, because I think we have to expect it's going to be very different. But I am a huge tennis fan, and I will love to see tennis if it's played at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center at the end of August.
God, I hope we do have it. Hey, Paul, thank you so much. I really do appreciate your time. I know how busy you are, and thank you for visiting with us to talk about tennis.
Guys, it's always a pleasure. You guys take care of yourselves, and look forward to having a good rest of the summer, and go Vols!
All right,
thank
Paul.
You,
thank
Paul.
You.
Appreciate
see
that.
See you guys. Bye.
See you, Paul. Thanks. That's a great Paul Anacone. By the way, he's got a couple of kids, Olivia and Nicholas, when he talked about his family earlier. But comments from Paul Anacone and saying that he thinks Novak Djokovic will end up with the most majors. That makes sense, given the age. It certainly does. I would see that. But as long as Nadal is playing in the French Open, it's kind of hard to not chalk another one up for him. But as I mentioned earlier, John, I think we're just blessed to see three of the all-time greats playing at the same time.
I agree 100%. And you wonder whether or not Djokovic is going to be able to close quickly, because at some point, even though you don't bet against great, Federer will have played his last match. And Nadal, again, I think that he would probably have already caught and passed Federer if he had not battled as much injury as he has. But I just wonder who's going to be the next great competitor or competitors for Djokovic, because I don't think it'll be that long comparatively before he is essentially the last man standing out of that trio.